Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, November 10th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the book of Ephesians, and we're in Ephesians chapter 5. I believe it's Ephesians chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savour. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you, as becometh saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery. But I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. And the wife, see that she reverence her husband.
Terry, is that you there coming in under my name?
Yeah, I'll get a change here in a second. I had to come in three times to get the volume I needed.
Okay. All right. Do we have any questions tonight? Can you hear me, Terry? Do we have any questions for tonight?
I haven't checked. Let me check. Give me about 30 seconds here, okay?
Okay. All right, well, I'll take 5 minutes, maybe just to read something. We're looking, let's see. Well, let me take a quick look at this, just talk a little bit about this. This was on SGT report. I don't know how many people listen to the SGT report. I listen often. There are some things this guy brings up that I think are a little far out, but he's got a lot of good stuff, too. We've got a lot of good... He really does a lot of good interviews, and this is an interview everyone should watch. You can find him, I believe he's on Rumble. Yeah, he's on Rumble. SGT Report, you can see that right down here. So anybody that might want to watch this video. So this was out today. I think people should take a look at this. This is about 6G. What was the plan of the deep state, the New World Order, the elite, whatever name you want to give them? Well, the deep state is really a tool of the New World Order. I think there's a deep state in most nations. And, of course, that's the battle. But this particular thing, anybody that went in to get tested during COVID, the plandemic, you know, if they did a test with you where they took this Q-tip on a long stick and they stuck it way up there in your nose. And, well, it turns out that they were putting, what do they call them, nanobots. And pretty much the whole world is infected by nanobots. And they are triggered by 6G. Which is the plan, of course. I don't know, there's so many things going on with this thing when people go crazy. They start to hear voices and all kinds of things. Anyway, this seems pretty serious. It does seem pretty... It seems like it really is true. The individuals involved with this that are taking a look into this and trying to counteract what they put in there, because these are nanobots, they can be counteracted, and that's what they're working on. And I'm sure they'll come up with something if they haven't already. But people should really be aware of this and take a look. So again, this is the SGT report. You'll find it. Let's see. I usually when I get a chance at the time, I'll watch the SGT report. And he's on Rumble. And again, it was today's. Program. So right now it was 23 hours ago. After our program, he'll be working on a new one, and so that'll be tomorrow. I'll be listening to it tomorrow, probably. But anyway, I strongly suggest people take a look at that. Okay, are you there, Terry? Did you?
Yeah, I don't find any questions, John.
Okay. I see Jan's in. Jan, do you know if we have any questions?
No, I didn't find any either.
Okay. All right. Well, let me see. Make sure the queue is open here. Hang on a second. Okay, we're in the queue. Q&A is open. So anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. If you're on an app or a browser, should be a button to get into that. Meanwhile, while we're waiting for people to get into the queue, I'd like to pick up a little bit what we looked at last week at the beginning of our program. We were looking at this is out of the book, Memorandums of Common Law, that I've written. Anybody interested in this book, you can find it under, you come to the Welcome tab, and you can click on Books by John Durash. And you'll find this particular book, Memorandums of Common Law, right here. And you can click on it for more details and to order the book if you're interested. But anyway, going back to just the book, I was started to read some of the presentation last week, and we'll pick up just to read a little bit more. And this is talking, we were looking at the Declaration of Independence, and this particular book is mostly memorandums of law, and it's quite a few memorandums of law. And each one of those, in my opinion, really is enlightening because it focuses in on a specific problem that needs to be fixed in the courts, particularly concerning the law. In the beginning of this book, again, let me see what this is labeled at. This would be the introduction, I guess. Preface. It's the preface. Okay, anyway, we read a couple of pages last week, and I would like to read this list. The last thing we looked at was the eight principles that the Declaration of Independence was built upon and what a government should be built upon. We looked at those eight principles. They were founded by Thomas Jefferson. And so these are the unalienable rights that is established inside the Declaration of Independence. Unalienable right to dissolve political bands, of course, for cause. Unalienable right to separate and equal stations with other nations. The unalienable right to be under the laws of nature's God. Truth is self-evident. All men are created equal. We're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are instituted to secure unalienable rights. Governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed. Unalienable rights, the unalienable right to alter or to abolish government. Unalienable right to institute new government. Under absolute despotism, unalienable right to throw off such government. Unalienable right to uninstall new gods for future security. God's people may appeal to the supreme judge of the world, and the unalienable right to be free and independent states. And right now, I think we really have to rest quite a bit on appealing to the supreme judge of the world with some of these things that these people have been doing and have been preparing to do, the evil that they've been preparing to do. I do see that Trump really seems to be in head of this game in a lot of these things. I'm not sure whether they have knowledge of this. Sometimes I wonder about some things that whether this administration has understanding or knowledge of. One of the main things, for instance, would be they keep using the word democracy, and we, of course, are not a democracy. We're a republic. We're a very special republic because we are a common law republic, or shall I say, a natural law republic. And I question whether they understand that, mostly because the people surrounding him are bar attorneys. They seem like decent people. They seem like they really want to try to get things back to where it belongs, but I don't know that they really understand where it really does belong. Maybe they do, and hopefully they do. We've been trying to inform them for quite some time on things that we think that they are not knowledgeable of. For instance, the original 13th Amendment that bars all bar attorneys from holding office or any kind of a position of honor, a position of trust, shall I say. The 17th Amendment, the illegality of it, number one, the 17th Amendment was never ratified. We've shown proof of that through research. Looking at the different states and their ratification of the 17th Amendment. And the 16th Amendment also was not ratified. So you got two amendments that were not ratified, yet they were passed as law, as if they are ratified and they sit there as law. And the 17th Amendment, of course, took away the power of the states to have a say, a vote in Congress, because senators are no longer sent to Washington to represent the state. They're sent there by the people, and the people already have representation. Our representation is in Congress, in the legislators. The Senate is supposed to have been under the control of the states. And so that particular power and authority was really important, that the state had certain power and clout and the ability of a vote in the Senate. And they were to control the Senate. Each state was to send two senators, and the 17th Amendment brought it to the point where the people are elected them. And they are controlled, again, by the special interest groups. They get all that funny money and see all these problems. And and especially what's going on with the closing of the government, that's a problem that is unconstitutional. There's no power or authority for anyone in government, particularly in the Senate, let's say, because the Senate's the only one that's doing this, where one person can freeze up Congress and shut government down. And we've been down for 40 days. Came back on today. Well, I heard about it last night, so I don't know whether it actually started to click on last night or today. But anyway, the government is reopening now. I understand it's going to take a few days to a week to get everything back to norm. But in any event, by what power? By what authority? You know, I've been thinking about doing a quo vanto on this. It's a little late for that, maybe. But maybe we'll do some kind of a paper and send it to the administration and to Congress and to the Senate. But whether they'll listen or not is another thing. You know, when it comes to the law, you can't tell a lawyer anything because they know it all. And they have no understanding of common law. They have no understanding of who we are as a people. They kind of seem to think, it makes people seem to think that they might understand, but they don't. They truly don't. They think we're under Roman law. We're not under Roman law. We're not under any law governed by man. We're under God's law, the laws of nature and of nature's God. So that's natural law that we're under. They call natural law, and they truly believe this. They believe that common law is a collection of decisions by trial courts. They think that that's what common law is. And those courts are just so far out of control. Just think about everything, all the laws they've made from just all the bad decisions that they have done. And they set precedents. So again, these are problems that need to be fixed. And if we can't fix these problems, we will never have courts of justice. And if we can't have courts of justice, we will never truly have liberty nor feel truly free, and we'll always be in a position where we might be injured by the courts themselves, because that's all they've been doing to people for quite some time. You know, I've been involved in hundreds of cases, literally, and in each one of them we're injured. Every single case we're injured. Cast out. Ignored. And it's a problem. So I don't know, because again, you know, you have all these lawyers that are around Trump, and he gets a lot of advice from these lawyers. You know, he is governed by code, by U.S. code, which is legislative law, and his being governed, he's governed by U.S.C. 3, which I believe is about 1,000 pages. And these guys, these lawyers that are around him that advise him on this are pretty good at that. They've been finding a lot of power, giving him a lot of understanding of a lot of powers and different things that he could do as president. And to some degree, of course, they understand the Constitution. But there are some blank spots that these people have, because they were taught from day one that we are under Roman law. And that is a huge, huge problem. So to kind of change that whole thing around is really a tough thing to do, because you got to break away from the influence of the lawyers in order to do that, to break away. And so we've been chipping at this for quite some time with, sending presentments to Trump and to Bondi and to Cash and all of his people in the administrations, in his administration, but particularly focused in on those three individuals has been our presentments. And so we've been kind of chipping away at that, hoping that, something will break and he'll come to have his moment of clarity on what natural law is and how far we are away from it. There is no conversation, there shouldn't be no conversation or debate on whether we are a Christian nation or not. Once the populace believes that, this nation is over. It's done. Our blessings is only because we desire to be under his law and not the laws of men. So, you know, again, we need to wake them up to this. So we'll continue to try. I'd like to send a lot of different papers to him, you know, Trump and his administration. But we'll see, you know, I might do something coming up in the next week or two with another paper focusing in again mostly on the courts. I think it's a little, well, it may not be too late really to talk about what's going on in the Senate and the powers that they claim to have had. Now, I went to the Constitution. I was already aware of this anyway, but I wanted to make sure I was for sure on this. There's only a couple of times, you know, as far as Congress is concerned and the Senate, they are to, you know, decide and make decisions by popular vote. In other words, in the Senate, it's always popular vote. The majority rules. End of subject, nothing to talk about. Constitution is crystal clear. There's only two times when two-thirds votes is required. Okay, you know, if you're going to do, if someone is going to be convicted in the Senate, if they are, you know, if the Congress turns and tries to impeach the president, they have to impeach by a two-thirds vote. And then that goes to the Senate, and the Senate tries the president, and they have to get a two-thirds vote in order to convict the president of whatever those charges might be that Congress has put upon them. It's sort of like the Congress kind of acts like a grand jury, and the Senate acts because its most important role is to deal with the judiciary. You know, they're the ones that send judges and decide the judges and to put them into power and authority. And so that's the trial court, okay? And during that session, I believe, if I recall, the Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice, would be presiding over that particular issue. But anyway, the other time when a two-thirds vote is required is that if the Congress passes a law and the Senate also agrees to that law and sends it to the president for his signature, then they have 10 days, the president has 10 days to either sign it or send it back. And if he doesn't sign or don't do anything, then it becomes law after 10 days. But if he doesn't sign it and sends it back, then that law does not go through. But they can now come, and they have to get a two-thirds vote in both houses to override the president. So that is the only two issues that I see in the Constitution that gives you know, gives the power or the authority to make a decision with beyond just the popular vote. Again, requiring two-thirds. Now, everything else is, again, you know, majority rule. And, you know, we have 50 senators, and if it's 50-50, then, of course, the vice president gets to cast the final vote to tip the scale, whichever way that he would tip that scale for that vote. So where they come up with this idea is total insanity, really. And it has something to do, I started to do some research on this, and I haven't finished up on it. Particularly, I was talking about pirates, that this idea really came from piratry some way. And again, I didn't look deep enough into that. Maybe I will, maybe we'll talk about that a little next week, I don't know. But anyway, it has something to do with that. And it was Aaron Burr, you know, the man who killed Hamilton in a duel. And he was vice president at the time, and he said something about this idea with this idea with what was going on in Congress here, I mean in the Senate here, and that's where it really all started. Now, I didn't do enough research that I can really articulate this very well, But that's the general gist of things. Again, you know, getting through to the president to try to break him away from the understanding of what lawyers might tell him. And again, he needs to listen to lawyers, particularly as far as his power and authority goes. But when it comes to the people, he needs to listen to the people. You know, unfortunately, they don't know. They don't understand that we, the people, have the power and the authority to come together as a grand jury at any time we decide. We don't have to ask for permission. If we have to ask for permission, then we're under their thumb. They are the masters and we are the servants if we have to ask permission. And at this point in time, you have to ask permission. They even got it to where if you wanted to do a habeas corpus, which they usually ignore anyway, but if they do get a habeas corpus to go through, the judge decides on whether he's going to let it go through or not. I mean, what kind of liberty is that? What kind of power of the people is that? The bar attorneys, of course, make the decision on who's going to sit on the juries, whether it be a grand jury or a petit jury, you know. They always stack the juries. They're only going to put people up that's going to be persuaded in the right way that they want them to go. Called stacking the jury. They do that through questionnaires. They know exactly what's in the minds of these people. It's a psychological thing. And we need to take this away and take it back. You know, judges don't have the power or authority to decide, at least not in common law, of what evidence is going to become before the court. You know, we have this thing with this kid, Robinson, that is supposed to have killed... killed the goodness, why did I forget his name here? Help me out here, Eric.
Charlie Kirk?
Charlie Kirk. I don't know, I couldn't think of his name. Anyway, he's supposed to have killed Charlie Kirk, okay? Absolute evidence he did not kill Charlie Kirk. He may have been involved somehow, and, you know, he may have been brainwashed or something. He could have been a patsy. I mean, I don't know what the story is with that kid. He was really lost. I've heard some things. It appears that he really was a lost individual. But in any event, he was a pretty bright kid, but I guess over the recent times he's had some problems. But in any event, the angle of his shot was not possible. This idea with the gun, I mean, there's so many quirky things. Who knows what was going on? But again, and I sent this video. There is a video of another shooter on the roof, okay, from a different angle and a higher angle, and I believe I played this part of this video on one of our Monday night programs, just a little piece of it. I don't think I did repost it, but I did send a copy of this video to the administration and Trump and his entire administration, and you know, I haven't heard any of their thinking, you know, as far as we're not hearing anything of holding back on this trial. Now, the trial has been kind of held up, but they're trying to have this trial go forward without cameras in the courtroom. And that is alarming, because we know they're going to put this kid down, and that's that. But he did not. I am absolutely not 99% sure. I'm 100% sure he did not shoot and kill Charlie Kirk. Okay? There was another shooter. And there is video of the other shooter on the roof. It's split second, and the angles were all off. And this was a forensic look at this whole thing with the shooting. There was plenty of evidence concerning, you know, Charlie Kirk, as far as you know, how that shot hit him and how come the bullet didn't come out on the other side. But I'm not hearing anything anywhere else on the internet. I know a couple of weeks ago we looked a little bit at this, and I know I've made mention of where people can find this video, but I'm going to look into that. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that next week and take a look at that again, that particular video shot. If I can find it quickly, maybe we'll play it tonight. But anyway, going back here on the unalienable rights, let me see if there's anybody in the queue. Nobody in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. There should be a button there if there's an app or a browser, if you want an app or a browser. Got one person coming in. Anybody else wants to get in, now's the time. But Let me just read just a little more. Again, this is on the introduction, the preface into the book, Memorandums of Common Law. And I'm just going to read a couple more paragraphs here. Let me see how much we got to read. I don't want to spend too much time on this. Yeah, just read a little bit more and then maybe just look at the list of the different memorandums of law that we have in this particular book. Okay, to solve the assault upon our republic seems overwhelming, and it is, but God has sent us a type of Osiris in President Trump. See the book of Ezra. To dismantle the deep state and bring the new world order under judgment, see Isaiah chapter 14. This provides an opportunity for we the people to reclaim our government and bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And this starts with an education of our heritage and an acknowledgement of our Creator and His laws. And then and only then will we enjoy the full blessings of God. Like our founding fathers, we too can be empowered through the knowledge and exercising of our God, living, giving liberties within His will. 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and will forgive their sins, and will heal their land. And it does seem to be a big movement towards Christianity, again, people being waking up and reconsidering, you know, what maybe they had in the past, or however they were raised, starting to, you know, consider their relationship with God. Matthew 11:28-29. Come unto me, all ye that are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. The unalienable rights of the sovereign people to self-governance was ordained by God through a covenant between the people and their God via the Declaration of Independence. When we, the people, assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us, whereas common law governs all men, and we, the people, via the Constitution, are the authority of all law that governs all state and national governments. And when such a servant government suppresses the people and robs them of their sovereignty, it is the right of the people to alter it, to remove tyrants via recall or indict them, or abolish it, the deep state, via self-enforcement and, if necessary, under Amendment 2. We the people will surrender to none but God as we stand upon our founding documents. And I don't think we're going to have to come to exercise our right of Amendment 2 to fix this problem. I think most of the problems that we have will be fixed by Trump. But the big problem we have, and this is where we have to really be involved, because we'll never have true liberty, but we'll never have our government under our control, under our thumb, until we accomplish this goal, and that is to get our courts of justice open again and give it back to the people. And they don't understand that. They don't want to understand that, but they don't understand it. Lawyers think that there's no way that people can govern themselves in that way, that we, the people, can take care of our own business. And to some degree, they are right, because, we are uneducated. But they're uneducated, too, and they are poisoned. It's better off that we have control, even as being uneducated, than for them with their uneducated position and their poison being through the bar, of course. The total purpose of the bar was to destroy our courts of justice, and they've done a very good job at that. They accomplished their goal. Only we the people can turn that back. And so that's why it's so important that we keep communicating with this administration, keep writing papers through presentments from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and keep chiseling away. And also, you know, a lot of people around his administration, not just within his administration, we have a list of about 40-some-odd people, we should be sending, because we just have to get one person to wake up to this. That's either within his administration or has a strong tie to his administration. We just need one person to wake up. Because if this one person wakes up and realizes it, what we're saying, and comes to the understanding of truly who we are as a people and how our government really should be structured, particularly in the courts and what a court of justice is and what natural law is and so on, and understanding the problem with the 13th Amendment and the problem with the 16th and the 17th Amendment, if we can wake just one person up that turns around, I got to believe that that person is just not they're going to be relentless to really try to make everyone else realize the problem also. And so that's kind of our strategy, to kind of wake Trump up, wake Bondi up. Bondi's going to be difficult because she's a bar attorney. And also Cash. I think Cash is a bar attorney, too. I'm pretty sure he has a background in law. That, again, becomes another problem with dealing with lawyers. I've tried so many times to talk to lawyers. Once they discover I'm not a bar attorney, and they discover that I'm self-educated, they just shut down. I'm too stupid. I'm too dumb. I can't know. They know what's going on. After all, they spent, $150,000, $200,000 for their education, and I didn't spend anything for mine. How is it that I think I know better than they do, So that's the problem we're up against there with that. Let me see. Again, let me make the note, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And button should be there if you're on an app or a browser. Okay, we've got quite a few people in the queue. We're going to be over in a minute. We're going to take some questions. I do want to do real quick, and I may not read this whole list. As time goes on, I'd like to read this entire preface here in this book. I think it's pretty informative, and it's an introduction to the book, gives people a good flavor and an understanding of where this book is going to take them. But what I want to get to, I think it's up further. Yeah, I'm going the wrong direction. Should have been up towards the front of the book. Yeah, hang on a second. Okay. And this is what I just want to go through very quickly. These are the memorandums. These are memorandums of law that I've written over the years. I've used them in the courts, at least most of them. Some of them I might have written and haven't used yet. But, I was just looking around. What are the problems that we have? What is the fix for the problem? What is the constitutional position that we can take to try to enforce and push forward the solution to the problems in the courts? Because if there's anything we need to understand is that if we don't get our courts of justice back, we can never feel totally liberated and to be able to exercise our unalienable rights. We'll never truly have the full force and the ability to exercise our Second Amendment right. Well, our First Amendment right will constantly be in jeopardy. Our Fifth Amendment right, many of our rights, okay, even the right of common law, which again is natural law, to have a common law process in the courts. It's Amendment 7, okay. And again, when they close the doors of when they close a court up and they have a trial that affects every individual in this country concerning this trial, with the assassination of Charlie, and they don't let the people in, and we're unable to see or hear what's going on, they're railroading that kid. And again, why is this kid still being held up for this murder, for this assassination, when in fact he did not do it? And I'm going to go back to see if we played this video in past in a past Monday night. And if we haven't, I'm going to take a section of it and play that video maybe next Monday night here. And people will see. I mean, it is conclusive that this kid could not have done it. But anyway, we'll set that aside for them. Let me just read through some of these memorandums. The abrogation of the law of the land. These are memorandums. They lay out clearly and set forth the constitutional position, sets forth the law and the common law, and also the rules of common law. Abrogation of the United States of America, Amendment 2, Amendment 10, Amendment 13, Amendment 16, Amendment 17. America was founded upon Christianity fashioned after Israel and not Rome. Article 3, Courts, Balance of Power, common law rules, common law. The poopophile, IRS and the BATF, are not government agencies. Courts of record, democracy versus republic, Engel versus Vitali, the Bible in the school. A lot of people don't know that the Bible was in the school till 1963. They took it out of the school in 1963. And America was much more morally minded, much more focused on justice and morals prior to the 60s. Okay, and it was in the 60s when things started to fall apart, you know, the hippie movement. And, you know, I was raised in that time. I was raised in the 50s and the 60s and in the city. And I was very conscious of a lot of those things were going on. Some of my friends were involved with some of that stuff. But anyway, big changes, big problems. And they took the Bible out of the school in 1963. And by the time we got into the late 60s, they already had that that free movement going, you know, again, the hippie movement. Faithful performance, family court, founding documents, government by consent, grand jury authority, habeas corpus, IRS fraud, judicial comity, jurisdiction, natural law, jury nullification, jury orientation, jury tampering and stacking, King's Bench, law and equity, law and jurisdiction, nonjudicial foreclosures, national customary law, quo vanto. And by the way, again, they not only got rid of common law by rule and put in place Roman law by rule, it was rule two, okay, which they believed that they were given the authority by Congress in order to make their own rules, okay, to do away with the rules of common law and replace them, you know, with their own rules. And they said they needed to do that because God's rules were too unjust, couldn't have them. I mean, that was their claim. Literally, that was their claim. And we don't know about this because we're ignorant. And this is why we need knowledge. Like Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. You can't have it. It's not for you. It's not yours. You don't deserve it. You got to be involved. You got to get educated. We owe it to our posterity and to ourselves, our families. Right of free access into the courts. Right to practice law. The county sheriff. Sovereign authority. Statutes, codes, and regulations. Trial by jury. These are the list of the different memorandums that are in this particular book. And it's a good education in itself, this book. It really will enlighten people to the truth and also be able to give you the ability to really speak on it and prove the fact that these things are the way it should be. The problem, again, the people in power, to get them to listen, that's the problem. They won't listen. They just shut you down. It's like the judiciary is just nothing but full of Democrats, because that seems to be what the Democrats have finally become. And by the way, that's by plan. That's been by plan going back goes all the way back to 1750, so 250 plus, so 275 years ago was the beginning of the destruction of our court system, to just totally destroy it. And really, you know, again, the whole plan was to create that Democrat Party in order to create in the minds of the people of democracy, and which is the first step to an oligarchy, and we're already there. We've already been ruled by an oligarchy, and we've been ruled by an oligarchy all of our lives. We just don't know it. It's a group of people behind the scenes pulling the strings. But of course, we have that chance to make that change. That change will be made. There's no doubt in my mind it's going to happen. But the question is, will we ever get back our courts? And it's up to the people who have come to an understanding, that have come to realize the problem and realize that there is a solution, and that the solution involves them. It involves you. It involves people stepping up and getting educated and taking control of their government, the right to have government by consent, the consent of the people, And you can only do that through committees of safety. It's exactly what our founding fathers did to control this nation, to create this nation, to take it away from Britain, to give it to the people. And of course, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, all of that was produced. All of that, the whole plan, everything executed and produced by committees of safety. And so we only need to do what our and our founding fathers understood, and they controlled their government and government by consent of the people through committees of safety. That's why they're saying, you know, we don't have government by the majority, we have government by the majority that participates. We should be participating in that way. Right now, they're participating with party bosses, statutory committeemen. The whole system is controlled. The stage is set. This criminal, that criminal. Criminal on the right, criminal left. Doesn't matter to them which one you choose. It just oscillates back and forth, and they keep making the changes and taking our liberties more and more as time goes on. We have the opportunity to take it back. The only question is, will we? Okay, we'll take our first caller here. Let's see. It's 703. It looks like maybe Richard. What state you're from?
Could you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Rick. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is about enforcement. I know we see that they're not doing what the government officials are not doing what they're supposed to, or even the courts. So I'm looking at enforcement when they're not doing it. I'm hearing some people are actually running their own court and making their own judgments. And I also hear that sometimes they put a lien on a judge or someone, to enforce when they violate the Constitution. But I know some details and steps, but I'm just wondering how the steps you would take for enforcement. For example, not going through due process, putting someone in jail when they didn't, put them in front of a magistrate, or, just following due process. What are some methods now that are being taken for enforcement?
Well, look, all those things you were talking about, is not the way to go, okay? Leaning a judge or something, trying to file a lien on a judge and all do different things. I've learned about all that stuff in the beginning when I started looking into the problem, trying to figure out where we're going to go, how do we fix this problem, how can I get involved? And through education, I discovered that that's not the way to go. These people, unfortunately, think that they're going to walk into a court, make certain points, hold certain positions, refuse to go beyond the bar, potentially lean or threaten to lean the judge. So they think they're going to walk into these courts, click their heels, and they're going to be transported into courts of justice. It's not going to happen. They're going to find themselves in jail. That's what happens over and over and over again. There may be a few people who've had some success, but I don't believe they've had much success at all. I've heard a lot of these people teaching these things, and I just don't believe them. I don't believe them at all. I've been in the courts too long to know you're not going to get away with that. And I tried some of this stuff myself. You're not going to get away with it. But how do you take control of the court? Well, you use the common law. You use natural law. You use the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. You use the founding fathers' conversations and statements on different things. You use Supreme Court rulings. There's a lot of great Supreme Court rulings out there. Most of them are good, as a matter of fact. There's not that many that are that bad. Most of the United States Supreme Court rulings are good. Of course, there are some problems, and there are some issues that need to be readdressed and dealt with, but those are the things we can lean on. So how can we, what are we going to use for enforcement? Well, again, like anything else, things take time. And patience. If you don't have patience, because this is the big problem with people, and it's an environment created by technology. People just don't have patience anymore. Everything has to be now. We're in a world of now. But we're not willing to give up too much other than some tweets here or there, a few pieces of knowledge, and think that that's it, that's all we need. No, forget about it. It's not going to happen that way. We have to come together on the grassroots level. And that's what we teach. You have to create committees of safety in every county, and that's what we teach. They have to be free and independent, cannot be controlled by any national group. We're a national group, but we're not here to control anyone here. We're here to facilitate a place where people can come together and get knowledge and understanding, have communications, have a place where they can get information when they ask for it and for advice. We'll give them as much advice as we can. We teach them how to structure a committee of safety, how to put it together, what are the first thing to do, what's the most important thing to do in the beginning. And one of the most important things to do in the beginning, really, is to work on your sheriff. That's one of the most big things. You know, you have to get educated. Everybody should be educated in the law. So some people will get more highly educated than others because they'll have that desire, and they may want to be on the Judiciary Committee, because you have to break up. Once you get your Committee of Safety going and you start to get membership, then different people want to sit on different committees. Everybody sits on a subcommittee, and they bring their reports to the General Committee, and the General Committee makes the final votes and decisions collectively by popular vote on what they're going to do, okay? And so you have, some people will want to sit on the militia committee. Some will be on the political committee. Some will be on the judiciary committee, the educational committee, and many, many other committees that they may discover that they need in order to have government by control. We have to learn how to file, habeas corpuses if we need them, of course. But we have to quo wantos, a writ of quo wanto. A writ of quo wanto is extremely powerful. But the problem is, and that's the point of your question, really, is where we're going to get enforcement. Well, we get enforcement, first of all, by educating our sheriff. You know, first order of business, when you get maybe 10 people or so together, roughly speaking, maybe you want more, maybe you feel comfortable go with less, but I wouldn't go with anything less than 10, 15 people. Once you have 10 or 15 people, now it's time to go see your sheriff, and you make an appointment with the sheriff. You're only going to spend 10 minutes with the sheriff. You're not going to spend a lot of time. You're going to go in there with certain books. You can download the books in PDF form, but I think it's much more impressive to get a handbook. If you go over to, for instance, let's see. Let me get up here. Well, first of all, before I go there, just the reason I came down here was just to look at how many committees of safety we have in process. Okay, let's see. Total county committees of safety being organized as we speak is 206 of them across the nation, and we have 3,134 counties, 3,133 counties. So we have a ways to go. It does take time to form a committee of safety. It takes time to get educated. It takes time to collect and get people together. And we'll teach you how to, you can get 20 people together or so. We can teach you how you can take those 20 people and in a short period of time turn them to 50, even 75 or 100, and growing constantly more as time goes on. And that's when you're really going to have the power. That's when you're really going to be able to do the business of the Committee of Safety to really take control of your government. But the first order of business, again, is to try to get maybe 10 people together. And once you do that, you visit your sheriff. You want to bring to the sheriff certain books, okay? If you go into the Welcome tab, you come down to books by John Duresh, okay? One of the books that's most important to bring to the sheriff is The Power and the Authority of the Sheriff. We have a book for the sheriff, the County Sheriff's Common Law Handbook, okay? And this book here will liberate the sheriff, okay? It'll inform him of his true powers and where they come from with plenty of proof to show his powers and authorities, okay? So that's a definite book you want to get to the sheriff. The other book that I think is extremely important to get to him is Government, and I tried to make this as affordable as possible. What's the price in this book? This particular book, that's not it. What is it? Oh, here it is. It's $7. Okay, so it's not a big deal. And I would suggest to get more than one to the sheriff so he can give it to others that are in power, his undersheriff, his captains or whatever he calls them, lieutenants. The other thing, of course, is Government by Consent. And again, I made this book as cheap as possible. It's only $39.95. And this book here is 550 pages. It's the maximum you could do on a book, the thickness of this book. This is an 8.5 by 11, so it's the size of a piece of copy paper, 8.5 by 11, and 550 pages thick, and it's hardcover. I particularly went with hardcover because it's a book that you want to go in all the time. You use it for reference, for law, for all kinds of things, and that's why I wanted to do hardcover and not softcover. I did do soft cover at first, but I moved over to this. This is the one I pushed now. But anyway, $39.95. This book here, of this kind of a level, with this much information in it, a hardcover, should cost 2-3 times the amount that I'm selling it for. So only making a few dollars profit. There's no big profit in this. The profit would be only in quantity being sold. And of course, this is one of the main sources of revenue for NLA at this point in time. But even that, it's really tough because everything's getting more and more expensive. So anyway, the key thing is this: your first meeting with the sheriff, you bring him those two books. You go, you try to get as many people to go with you. If you got 10 people, try to get all 10, or you go in with 8 or 5, whatever it is. And you just introduce yourself to them. It's going to take you a couple of months to form and get information and put it together on who you are, as far as a group. You want to have a resolution done. You want to have the charter done. We teach you how to do that. If you go to start a committee of safety, come down to handbook videos and tools. This is the page, everyone, right here. This is the page. You should start from the top, go down to the bottom, read everything on this page, watch the videos, and you know exactly what needs to be done, because this is a complete overview picture of a committee of safety, how to structure a committee of safety, what are the subcommittees of the committees of safety, what are the strategies, the first order of business, how to approach the sheriff, all the things I'm talking about right now concerning the sheriff. So when you come down here and you go down to these PDFs and Word and PowerPoints and videos. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff here. But these particular PDFs, here's a copy of the Committee of Safety Charter, okay? And this is just the framework, and you take this and you create your charter out of this, okay? And you organize your committee. You have to have a chairman, co-chair, secretary, and treasurer. So you need at least five people. Again, that's why I say 10 people or more before you hit the sheriff. But you got to create this. And remember, you can add and change this at any time. But this tells the sheriff who you are and what you're doing. This is, for instance, in my case, New York State, Dutchess County, Committee of Safety Charter. And then we lay out what we're doing, what our purpose is, and we also talk, I think, in here about supporting the sheriff. Okay. The other thing, of course, is you go back and the other book, the other paper you need to put together is resolutions. Okay. Again, we've structured everything for the people. You're going to add a lot of stuff to this, and over time you're going to add more. But you just start with this structure, with this framework. And you put these two papers together, you want to take it down to the Staples or Office Max or someplace, and you want to have it professionally sealed up. I've got my own, I got this tool that I bought a while back where I can put rings on the edge of the paper. In other words, like a binder. You can also get a binder and actually have a glue binder. They sell them too. But I went with the ring binders, and so you get these long rings that when you open, put the holes in with this tool, you put the holes into the paper, and then you put the ring binder onto it. And it's like a book, and there's a front thick cover, a plastic sheet cover in the front, which is clear, and the back a thick cover, which I've got black on mine. I got some blue, dark blue also, but anyway, it's a nice book. So you're going to now go to the sheriff with this, and you're going to get a seal, okay? We show you how to do a seal, a Committee of Safety seal, how it should be structured, what it should be look like, what you should put on it. We strongly suggest put 1776 AD as the date in the middle. That's when the Declaration of Independence was put forth. Your county and your state. And this is the Committee of Safety seal. So everything you do, you want to seal on all your paperwork. any communications. You want to have a seal on it, okay? But anyway, you put this these two papers together, okay? The charter and the resolution. You bind it. You bring it with to the sheriff with copy of government by consent in the sheriff's handbook. I would get a couple of sheriff's handbook, like I said, for some of his lieutenants or whatever his under sheriff or so on. And you just tell him, hey, look, you know, we'll go through all this material. We'd like to sit with you maybe a month or two from now. We'll give you a call, and you come down to meet us at one of our meetings and talk to our group, and we got some questions maybe, and we'll talk to you. So you're going to give him now a couple of months, okay? And he's going to need a couple of months in order to digest all of the material you gave him. I mean, he can get through the handbook and the resolution and the charter. You know, if he sat down for an hour or two, he can get through it without a problem. But then he should be able to thumb through the book, Government by Consent, and see all kinds of things that's going to change his whole view on life and who he is as far as his position as a sheriff, how things should be really work and who we are as a people and what he owes to the people of his community and what the people of the community need to support him. So that's the whole purpose, and that takes some time. So generally speaking, by the time you decide to create a committee of safety and start gathering together, maybe 4 months or 3 months before you can actually go visit the sheriff for the first time. And it'll be maybe 5 months down the line before he'll come to, you know, to your meeting. And hopefully by then you've got 20, 30, 40 people or whatever you can get, okay? 20 people or more is fine in the beginning. The point is you got to get them on your side, okay? We even put together a list of questions you want to ask the sheriff. You don't want to embarrass him, but there are certain questions you have to ask. And if you start to discover this guy is squirming, this guy is not interested, he hasn't read the paperwork you gave him, hasn't looked at the books you gave him, well, he's got to go. He's got to go. Well, you got 20 people. You got enough people to walk a recall. And recall this guy and get another sheriff in there. Hopefully the next sheriff come in will work with you. And whoever's running for office, for that, take his position when you replace him. And you do that through recall. We teach you how to do that too, right on that page. You get all that info. We got the Committee of Safety handbook there. You can read through that. Teaches you how to do that. The political book goes through that process. But in any event, you see some people running for sheriff. You want to try to you get them interviewed. You see how who's interested and really appears to be a patriot and really interested in working with the people, and interested in growing in his understanding and knowledge of his position, who he is, and the power and authority he has, and where it should be focused at. And you'll know the right person through your, when you start questioning these people and having conversation with them, you're going to know the guy that you want to support. And then you're going to want to get out there and walk his papers and get him under the ballot. And you want to get the word out into the community. All kinds of different ideas you can put together to communicate with the people of the community that will be voting for the sheriff and why they should vote for him. You know, you can get a list of everyone in your county, and you can send out information from the committees of safety. But the thing is this, you got to get a sheriff on your side. This is where enforcement comes from. Because once you educate the sheriff, and the sheriff understands and starts working with the people, now you start going to different places. The best and quickest way to grow is to start and push a lot of focus on the education committee. Now, the educational committee, that is what's really going to help you grow. Because, for instance, in my county, I think it's 19 or 20 school districts we have in my county. Okay? So we want to visit every one of those school districts. Every time you visit a school district, you want to pick people up. How are you going to do it? We laid out a plan for that also. We put together a postcard to invite people in that particular school district that you're planning on going to the school, to the next board meeting for the school district, and you want to read them the Riot Act. You want to let them know what we the people want. We want them to stop demoralizing our children. We want them to start doing this, that, or the other thing. So anyway, you're going to send that information now to all the people in the county, all the people in that school district within that county, and you're going to then have them come to the meeting. You'll keep the meeting in the beginning. You want to do a formal procedure in the beginning, but the focus of the whole meeting really is on what's going on in the schools, okay? And And so, you know, maybe take 10 minutes to bring things together, pledge allegiance, say the prayer, talk a little bit about old business and what the new business is at hand for today, and, you know, the people here, blah, 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 and we're going to talk about education. So now you talk with these people about what are the problems going on in the school? What do you think needs to happen? What do we need to do to fix the problems, what we may, some of us may perceive, some of us may not? And people will come up, yeah, hey, this is a problem, and other people may not know that that was a problem. But you're going to get a lot of conversation. And let's say you get 30 or 40 people that actually show up. So the next plan is to say, okay, the board's going to be meeting on a certain date, and you make the plan on how you're going to approach this board. And when that, if they try to shut you down while you go up to the mic to talk, well, the person behind you will pick up where you left off. And you just bring this right through that whole process. You take, as a group, you take control of this whole process concerning this school meeting and what we desire for them to do, and they need to be obedient to the people because we have government by consent. And you got to stop demoralizing our children. And so when they are, when they become adversarial, they become they become argumentative, okay? Well, that's where you have in the back pocket, you have the writ quo warranto. And now the sheriff needs to be there, or one of his deputies. He doesn't have to be there. You can send a deputy. It doesn't matter. But you want a deputy there that's going to actually do the serving of that writ quo warranto. You're going to file it with the local courts system, right, in the, you know, the Supreme Court or the state court in your county. And they got 3 days to explain by what authority they have that they're doing what they're doing, which they can't explain. Either they're going to turn around and start to do the will of the people, or you're going to remove them through the writ quo warranto, and you remove them from their position, and then you take their seats until the next election. And you do this with town boards. You do this, any board, any government agents, any government that's controlled by a board, you can deal with a town board, a village board, and so on and so forth. Also, you get involved with the political process, and we're not going to get into all these details. For more knowledge on this and what I'm talking about, for a lot of detail of this, is right here, start a committee of safety, come down to handbooks, videos, and tools, and devour this page. Eat it up. Understand the process, the procedure, the plan, and start putting together your committee of safety. And then you got enforcement with the sheriff. You start to get enforcement through the courts. And because the sheriff's going to be involved with you, you're going to file the papers in the court writ quo warranto. They got to respond to that, okay? And you're going to remove them from office, and you're going to move on. And you're going to have what's called, this is government by consent. Just going out to the poll to pull a lever is not government by consent. Putting the right person onto the ballot, that's government by consent, and that's what committees of safety do. They put people onto the ballot. They support those people, and then they work together with them. And when they break their oath with a phone call from the chairman from that county, needs to go to that particular individual that broke their oath to explain the Riot Act to them. You know, we want to meet with you. Whatever the date and the time, you give them 2 days or two times, you know, 2 days, different dates, and you meet with them, and they got to get their act together, or we're going to recall you. They need to know this before they even go into office, that if you break your oath, and go up against the people, we're going to recall you. We're going to pull you out of office. And that's something that's very rarely used. I've never seen it used. Well, that's not true. I've heard on a couple occasions over the years. Not that I was involved with it, but just heard about it. But it's rare that people use the recall. But you can use that recall because that's government by consent. So anyway, that's where we get a power and authority. It takes time. And anybody who starts a committee of safety, I would say, in order to get to the point where you're really starting to reel your power and build your committee of safety to hundreds and literally hundreds, plural, okay, it's going to take at least a year if you go follow the plan very carefully. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of these people, every school board you go to, you're going to pick up 20, 30, 40 people to join your committee of safety because they're going to see the power and the authority of it. They're going to see that they need to be educated. They're going to see the education in it. And the people that have their children into the school, they're going to want to be on that, you know, that education committee, you know. And people choose what committees they want to be on. but everybody gets onto a subcommittee in order to do something to bring us to government by consent. All right, I know that was a long time, but there's a lot to it, and this is where you get educated on that page. You got something else? We've got other people, so go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to comment that, yes, I was considering starting a committee of safety. I went to a couple of meetings with some other counties that have a committee of safety in my state. So that was one of the things I was looking at. And also a grand jury oversight committee I was looking at also. So I was trying to find out which one is the most important one to start up with.
Well, I think the most important one is the Judiciary Committee, which would deal with the grand jury, the trial jury, and the court system. And then also we're working on trying to get, four or five individuals, and we're calling them administrators, okay? And we take away from the bar attorneys in the court. We, the people, need to take control of that. And this is a paid position, by the way. You know, there is money allotted by the controller for the purpose of operating the administrators, for the purpose of bringing forth and orientating the juries, whether it be a grand jury or a trial jury. And that requires an education. We provide that education. And I started working on a handbook. It hasn't been finished. I'm not in a big hurry with it because it's a while away yet, but once we start to really get approaching, if it's not done by then, I'll get it done. But I got a lot of information already pulled together for the handbook. And the handbook will assist those four to five individuals. One of them has to be a paralegal, so we have to find a paralegal who will want to take that position as an administrator. And you need four administrators. Those are the individuals, again, they orientate the grand jury or the trial jury. They empower the grand jury, making sure that they get access to any information that they want or need in their investigation and whatever it is. And if they come up with something new, because they are the people, someone may become aware of something. Hey, we want to go investigate something over here because we're doing this, that, and we saw something else over here, and we want to know what's going on over there. Well, we empower them. Those administrators will empower those people to go forward, to get into that office, to look into the computers, to look through their records, to talk to the people, what's going on, or whatever it is that they need to do to get to the evidence or get to the bottom line. If there's a problem there, what is the problem, and how can we fix it? And if we can't fix it, then we need to consider an indictment. And if they consider an indictment, they indict and send it to the trial jury. And the administrators will also be also an investigative body to work with them if they so want. I mean, we can't force ourselves upon them, but we definitely can open the doorways, force the individuals that they want to investigate, which, of course, is always, almost always, government agencies, and to make sure that they open the doors and give these people everything they want. This is a grand jury. They got the power. They got the authority. They are your boss. You work for them. Whatever they want, give them. And then we have the ability to enforce that. We can get, court authority. We can get sheriff's authority. Again, we have to establish that relationship with the sheriff, which is the most important thing, because that, right there, that's the power that we need in order to get enforcement. And when we have a sheriff that's working with us, coming to our meetings, sending a representative or deputy or whatever to our meetings, looking to that individual for advice in his area of expertise, okay, seeing that we are the people and we are interested in not only obeying the law, we want the law enforced. You see, when you get that relationship with the sheriff, now you're going to take your county back, you're going to take local government, you're going to take villages and towns back, you're going to take school boards back, you're going to work up to the county level. The people elect on the county level, and you'll be working together with other committees of safety, eventually taking control of the state, and then, of course, the federal government, the congressmen that we bring and put into office, And also, look at, we can take a, if you get enough committees of safety going in a state, in order to remove a governor from office, I'd love to remove the governor of New York State here where I'm at, okay? But in order to do that, you have to have enough recall petitions. And at least, I think if I recall, it's 2/3 or maybe 3/4 of the counties. So let's just say, you know, you have 40 counties, just to make it easy. Well, you have to have so many signatures out of at least 30 of those counties. That would be 3/4, okay? So if you get enough signatures out of that area, because you're going to have to work with other committees of safety, then you'll be able to recall a governor. You can recall your congressman if you're not happy with them. You know, in most cases, you might be dealing with two or three or maybe even four of the counties. And if they have committees of safety in those counties, then you can walk the papers and have a recall done on your congressman. And you could get other people from other counties to come to your committee of safety to learn what's going on. You can assist them to help them build committees of safety in their county. That's part of the process, part of the procedure. Because you have to, power is in the people, and we have to get together. You know, united we stand, divided we shall fall, and we are not united. We need to get united in a way where we come together and we agree upon things and we move forward and take power and get rid of these snakes that are in office and take control. Not only of our government, but of our schools. So if people don't want to do that, then you don't deserve a Bill of Rights. You don't deserve liberty. And nevertheless, you're not going to have it, because you can't have that unless you exercise your unalienable right of government by consent. All right, you got a final statement? I got to move on because there are other people. I spent a lot of time on this. All right, I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the great information.
All right, thank you. And I spent a lot of time on this one because this is what we do. This is the important thing we're doing. Okay, let's go to Florida here. We got Felicia from Florida. You got the mic. Am I pronouncing that right? Felicia? Looks like it. Yep, Florida.
407. Yeah, I had to unmute.
Yeah, how you doing? I recognize your voice. Go right ahead.
I'm doing great. I have a couple of questions. I'm going to be quick because you have a lot of people in the queue. My job I've been on for 10 years. It'll be 11 years, December 30th. All of a sudden, they cut me from full-time to part-time, and I'm trying to see about how I need to go about that here in the state of Florida at an at-will state. That's question number one. I called my manager's boss. She didn't answer. So the next step is for me to call her boss, and then the next step is the 1-800 number because they don't want me to break the chain of command.
I missed the beginning of this. You went from full time to part time, and where are you working for? Who are you working for? What?
I don't want to say, but I'm just going to.
Is it a government agency you're working for?
No, it's not.
Okay, all right. Go ahead. So you went from full-time to part-time, and you didn't want that to happen, right?
After being there 10 years, and on the 30th of December is my 11th year anniversary, and they cut me from full-time to part-time. They bought in a third-party organization to do half the tasks that we're supposed to do, but they're giving people that haven't been there no longer than 2 years more hours than me.
Well, you know, I don't know exactly why. You do want to try to find out why. You might be able to build a case. I couldn't possibly tell you how that case would be or look unless I knew the details, and you'd have to do some exploring to understand why these people that haven't been there longer and you've been there for a while, aren't you being treated better or getting more hours? There could be a reason for that.
And
remember,
I do most of the work.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're allowed to just stand around and do nothing.
But do the upper links know this? That's the big question.
Yeah, they do.
They do know.
Yeah, they do.
Well, that's kind of, you know, sounds self-destructive to me. If a company's going to run and take the people who are not doing the work and pay them and get rid of the people who are doing the work, I mean, that's self-destructive. I don't understand that. I don't know that you have a case. You'd have to look to see if you can build a case. You have to have what's
called... I would have to call you not on here, so, and let you know the details, because I don't want it out there like that.
Well, you have to have a good cause of action, okay? And a cause of action has to be something that you know, gives you a right to that, your position that you're bringing into the court in order to get the conclusion, you know, the decision of the court that you're looking for. You know, I think you're in the course, aren't you? You took the, or are taking the court course, right? And for anybody that doesn't know about it, we give we have lots of courses. Let me just take a moment to talk about this. We have a lot of courses you can find under the Education Starts Here tab. And if you come down, these are the different courses we have. We have a foundation study that's free. We have a Constitutional 101 study that's free. We have a free civics course. Then government by consent course, which is a basic course. We request people to be a premier member, that someone giving us $5 a month or more to support us. We have a free militia course, and we have a jury administrator accredited course that requires also to be a premier member. But then on top of that, we do have a court access and the common law course. Okay, now that's one course we do charge a lot of money for. For what you're getting, it's real cheap. It's only $125, but we teach people court access, how to come into the courts, how to write the papers, you know, all the different forms, you know, how do you make up the cause of action, how to structure your paperwork, and at the end, you know, how to work with your what's called a wherefore clause, how to open up a court of record, and how to make motions in the court, filing the papers, serving. I mean, we teach all of that stuff. That's what a lawyer would learn. We also have it from the position. I'm going to have to mute you for a second. Hold on a second.
I can.
Okay.
I was standing outside. I just washed up
and
after lunch.
Yeah, it was getting a lot of like wind or something. All right, anyway, this course here will give you good knowledge of the courts. Now, you go through this course, you'll know how to file papers. Now, writing is another story, and we give a lot of hints and clues on how to write, and the key thing is reading other papers, other people's papers. And we have lots of papers you can read. We have the books, just the books we have. We also have a book called Court Access and the Common Law. Matter of fact, you find that under, again, back to the page where our books are. Come under Welcome, come down to Books by John Duresh, and we have the book Court Access and the Common Law right there, which is a good idea to buy that book also, especially if you're going to take the course. You should have the book. It doesn't run chapter by chapter the same way, because I wrote the book first from one perspective, but when I was teaching the course, I realized that I had to take it from a different perspective, so the chapters don't align back and forth with it, but you can find the information that's in the course also in this Court of Record and the Common Law book. And again, you know, it's only $39.95, so it also is 8.5 by 11 book. It's, I forget how many pages on this one. Let's see, how many pages here? 500, yeah, it's a thick book, 547 pages. So it's maxed out, and it's thick, you know, an amount of information we can put into it. And it's a hardcover book because, again, I figure people are going to be in and out of that book. You want something that's going to last. Paperbacks will break up quickly, you know, especially if you're using it as a reference kindly, you're going to break up. But anyway, people should know the law, and that's where you start with these this book and this course that we're talking about, and the other free courses, you know, that you can take as time goes on, and also the other premier courses, which, again,
I've taken them all, so
appreciate them.
I've taken them all. I'm sorry about the wind. I just walked out the door and I saw NASA launching, so snap a picture. And my second question is, what do you think of 3-Eye Atlas?
You know, that's real interesting. I wonder what's going on with that thing. It's weird. But one of the problems is here, you know, AI is out there that people are using, and they're creating things that aren't real. And sometimes you're getting this stuff. You know, they use that one guy, I think he's Chinese or something. He's an elderly guy, and he's very well known. You know who I'm talking about? I'm trying to think of his name. He's got a weird name.
He knows nothing.
Huh?
He knows nothing.
He knows nothing?
No, he's a puppet. Well, no, he really don't know.
Yeah, but they are using him in a lot of AI-created material and speaking as if he has this great knowledge of what's going on with this stuff. And so it's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of... It's hard to tell what's true anymore on the Internet. And, ever since AI has kind of popped up, that genie's out of the bottle, and it's hard to know. So you got to be careful.
Well, here in Florida, you can see everything.
Yeah. Well, there is that one guy out there that's been talking about it, and he's a well-known scientist. And again, I don't remember his name either, but he's got an accent, and he's been talking about it for quite some time. And I kind of trust what he's saying. He's not saying it's alien, but he says we've got to consider that possibility because it's doing strange things that we don't even understand how it's doing.
Well, Mr. Clark has told me about it 15 years ago, and he told me it was a Dyson sphere. And I've talked to you about it. It's a Dyson sphere.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. A Dyson sphere, you're talking about the Atlas, right? That is something
well,
like a...
Well, I mean, that's not it, but it's behind it.
Oh, okay. I don't know anything about that. I haven't heard anything about that, so I don't know. But I heard a lot about the Atlas, and it's just very strange, very, very strange. So,
yeah,
but eventually we'll understand it because it seems like it's going to swing around.
It already has.
Yeah, it appears that it's going to do that, which means it may come by the Earth. Okay.
No, but it dropped a lot of pods.
Yes. Well, that again is very, very strange stuff. And it maintained the same speed and following the same course. And again, it seems like it's visiting the planets. It's coming in on the right trajectory. I mean, there's all kinds of... You got to wonder. I don't know what's going on with that. It's weird. So, but I do think eventually we're going to find out.
Yeah, we will. We will. But I don't want to hold you up. That's all I had to ask.
All right. Thanks a lot, Felicia. We'll take on next caller. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead. How you doing, Ross?
Good. I'm doing good. You heard the great Idaho movement?
I'm missing that. Try that again.
You can't hear me.
I can hear you, but you're a little hard to understand right now, but try it again. Go ahead.
I'm saying the Great Idaho Movement.
Oh, the Idaho Movement?
Yeah, the Greater Idaho Movement.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. So far, only 10 counties in Oregon, and they are mostly in eastern Oregon. He wants to leave the state of Oregon.
So they want to remove themselves from the state? Well, they can't do that lawfully in the Constitution. I can understand why they would like to do that, maybe. And this is in Oregon, then. I thought you said Idaho.
Yeah.
Or something.
No, that's the name of the movement. So, state of Idaho, say yes, you can join our state. Said the state of Oregon state legislature has to approve it. Then the Congress has to ratify it.
Yeah.
Move.
Okay, the Greater Idaho Movement is an effort in the United States for counties east of the Oregon Cascades to secede from the state, Oregon, and join Idaho. It is primarily led by conservatives' dissatisfaction with the liberal lean of the geographic. It'll be a lot easier for them to create committees of safety and just take control. They got enough counties here. If they got enough people to try to make this movement go, they got enough people in enough counties to really move very quickly, get committees of safety, and start taking control of that state. We don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates, and that would be a large majority participating. So that's what they should be doing. They're not going to succeed in succeeding from the one state to move into another state. It's not going to happen.
It's kind of the problem. Right now, Congress is really not unified to ratify anything.
But, it's, again, it's... they're wasting a lot of energy going the wrong direction, in my opinion. I mean, I don't like to discourage people from doing anything, but this is a waste of a lot of time and energy. You know, if someone could get a hold of them and send them our way to take a look at what we're doing, we'll give them a different way to go, because first of all, it's going to take many, many years to go through this whole process, and the end results, they're not going to really succeed. You know, they can do this a lot quicker and maintain their whole state and take control of the state by government, by consent, exercising that unalienable right, and doing this through committees of safety, and they have much more control.
Yes, that's like Beulah, Union, and those counties in the Eastern Oregon, who wants to succeed Oregon, because they are all conservative counties. And right now, the Democrats have the supermajority of the Oregon State Legislature. That's the problem.
This is an easy problem to solve. I can help them solve this problem in no time. If they got this many people involved, I can help them, and they can take that state back. Even before that, they should be building committees of safety, and in the process of doing certain thing, which I'm going to try to explain right now, okay, in doing a certain thing, they will be building committees of safety. But what they need to do is very simple. They've got enough of a state involved here, enough counties involved here to be able to remove the governor. I presume the governor is a major problem. That's number one. They also have enough here to be able to remove the legislatures and the assembly and replace them. They can do recalls on all of them and bring in regular people, but they just got to get involved, okay, and they got to learn how to do it. It's a pretty simple process.
Yes. I think the problem is they are frustrated. Portland, Oregon has too much power in the state legislature.
Well, the problem is this, okay? They're too frustrated, and they're following the first plan or idea that come to mind that they think is going to work. I will assure you it's not going to work. It's going to take 20, 30 years before you even get to the point to get enough things going on this. They've been trying to do this in New York for as long as I've been involved in and I've been involved in this movement since 1999, moving into 2000. So I've been in this for over 25 years. And as long as I can remember, at least the full 25 years, okay, when I became conscious of what's going on in New York, okay, there's always been a movement. They want to separate themselves from New York City. You know, New York City constantly drags down the entire state here in New York. It is a major problem, and I understand their problem. They got too much representation, and they're too liberal. And then we have these liberal, the most liberal governor you can find. I mean, might as well be a socialist or a communist, because they're just totally destructive. But the solution, okay, again, all these years, they still haven't gotten there. They're not going to get there, I'll tell you. They're wasting their time. Anybody who knows people, if you can get their leader to give me a call, their leadership group, I can give them some ideas, and they could do things a lot quicker and take back their state.
I saw another state is doing this, another set of counties in another state.
Let me reread the rest of what I'm seeing here. It is primarily led by conservative dissatisfaction and the liberal lean of the geographically small but more heavily populated northwestern region of Oregon, driven by the Portland area. And this is the problem we all have, these cities. The Democrats have been working on these cities and demoralizing those people and bringing them into craziness, you know, for a long time. But Portland areas and other cities in the Willamette Valley. Proponents argue that the rural eastern counties have more in common with Idaho and are not adequately represented in Oregon state policies. And you can continue to read more on Wikipedia. So that's the general idea. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to spend 20 years on this and still not succeed. Again, we got a movement here in New York for over 20 years. It's not going to happen.
I don't know the name of the other movement, but the surrounding counties of Cook County, Illinois, wants to join Indiana, the state of Indiana. the same situation. They're not satisfied with the state. What is it? The Illinois state legislature is not listening to the opinions, the rural areas of Illinois.
Well, again, I do believe they're wasting their time. They're not going to succeed. There's much better way, and they can succeed a lot faster and take control. And a lot of these people that have been elected that are problematic, most of them being Democrat, but some Republican too, it's because they've been cheating at the election. That's all going to end. By the time we get to next year's election, it's all going to be solved by that point in time.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is because both all the citizens of all the states depend on this major political parties to be the answer to everything.
I missed that. Try that again. The problem, what?
All the citizens of all the states think the political parties are the only answer to this situation to fix our country. So the political parties divide our nation.
Well, let me put it this way, and our founding fathers were crystal clear on this, and we've been trying to get this knowledge to the president, and so that his administration can start taking this in a very serious manner, and it needs to be done. And if it's not done, we're just going to end up back here again, because right now everything's run by party bosses. The whole thing depends on party bosses. Party bosses are because of political parties. Washington spoke about this. 2/3 or so of his farewell address was focused in on this problem. Our founding fathers were in one accord with this. Political parties are problematic. A natural law republic cannot survive political parties. Washington said it's going to be the destruction of our nation. And here we are exactly that. Why do you think these Democrats that come together and did what they did? Why? Because a party boss told them to do so. Someone in power and authority that has a lot of influence or control over the individuals within that party, and they've been trained that way. They've been trained by that way before they even became into that office, and they was getting involved with the political process. They were trained. You got to work in the party. We got to work together. You got to do this. No. Look, we need to get rid of political parties. People have been deluded into their thinking that we need political parties. We have to have at least two political parties. That's a lie from Hades, a lie from Hades. That is not true at all. Political parties are the destruction of this nation. Just think about this. If you send someone, you elect a congressman, and they don't have an allegiance to a party, there is no party boss controlling them. And they go into power. You put them in Congress, so you elect your congressman, and you put them into Congress. Now, whose will is that person going to do? Okay, first of all, and we got to get and you know, you have all this funny money from all of these different groups, the special interest groups that have a major part of that. We can eliminate that too, because we have to. But the thing is this. When you send a representative into Washington or even up to your state level to represent you, if they're not controlled by a party, they're going to, in all, most cases at least, they're going to vote their conscience, what they think is best for the people. After all, that's the job that they were voted in for. And it becomes a problem when they get in and start to discover how much control that the party boss has them. Look at how long it took, 40 days to break the party's hold, the boss's hold on that particular party, being the Democrat Party, to break the hold that they have on all these people. Finally, they, a small group of them broke away and said, no, we're going to open the government up. This has gone too long. We can't have this no more. We got to stop. Okay? They're not going to be supported into their office no more, at least not by the Democrat Party. They're going to be destroyed by the Democrat Party because they broke away from the party boss. And others are going to learn this and see this, and there's going to be more fear and more control. And this is the problem with this nation. Nothing but corruption through political parties. Political parties and bar attorneys have got to go. And if we don't eventually mature enough to be able to come to an understanding and exercise that our rights and our authority to remove those things and to bring it back to the people, then we don't deserve anything we have, okay? We need to get up and do take care of these things. We are trying to educate the administration, you know, Trump's administration, in this problem with the political parties. It's a hard one to climb up because they're stuck in the middle of this whole thing.
Yes.
So, right, thank you. Appreciate the call, Ross. Okay, let's go to Anonymous. Give us your first name, Anonymous, and your...
Yes, hello. Can you hear me, sir?
We can hear you.
Oh, thank you. This is Elizabeth out of Arizona. I'm just learning so much tonight. I have a focused question of a concern, and I'm not quite here yet in terms of knowing the answer, but I just have a question because potential parties that I'm going to be suing, or I need a trial by jury, but am I going to be able to subpoena all the emails that happened in between us and in between them regarding me during this time that all this stuff went down? I'll be able to subpoena all their emails.
Well, I remember talking with you about different things, and but I don't remember or recall particularly whether you were going up against the status quo or...
I'm under real estate sales fraud, and I was totally crushed. And right. I have a lot of the emails I've saved, but I was so ill when this first started, like 3.5 years ago, it really took me down. And I've been getting stronger, and I did save a lot of stuff. But what's happened is, in my efforts to with the changes, because I used to build websites and I had a cPanel and all this stuff, that they've all changed and they're not as finely tuned as they used to be. And
it's become worse. You have to have more technical knowledge.
It's horrible. Horrible.
I've come to the same problem, and I'm really, really disgusted. I've been doing business with these people for almost 30 years, and
uh-huh.
30 years, goodness, probably
yeah.
more than 30 years, and sold
yeah.
off to a different group of people, and boy, they are the worst. They've bastardized the entire process to go in there to try to figure
yeah.
things out.
It's another planet. I mean, it's not even the same, you know. But my main concern about this is for evidence.
Right.
And
well,
so
you can subpoena that, and you should be able to get it. There is a process that you go
uh-huh.
through. Process,
right.
And
I haven't learned that yet, but I see it in the course. I see it up ahead. So
yeah,
is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, called discovery. Okay.
Okay.
It's the discovery process.
Okay.
And in that discovery process, they have to respond and give you everything you're looking for. The big thing
okay.
is to get to that point, okay? You got to do a couple of things. When you go for the lawsuit, and I've learned this the hard way, believe me, you got limited income, and you try to save a dollar here and a dollar there. And, you know, when it comes to serving them, do not try to serve them through a friend or you want to go to the sheriff, have the sheriff serve them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Once the sheriff serves them, they can't throw you out for improper service. Even when I have properly served the papers. I know how to serve papers. I know what the law is. I know it needs to be done. And I do it right every single time. In the beginning, I made some errors, but I do it right every single time. And that's it. I stop now. I got to use the sheriff because they'll say this, that, or the other thing, and the judge is working with the other side. And because I'm not a lawyer, you know, a bar attorney anyway. I do believe I'm a lawyer, but not a bar attorney. But nevertheless,
they're not a lawyer either. They're not lawyers either. You know.
They're morons, in my opinion.
They're Halloween, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, the judge will always play ball with that other side just because they're a bar attorney and he's a bar attorney, you know. It's family kind of things, you know. And they will throw you out constantly over and over and over and over again.
Okay,
so
yeah.
The first thing you want to make sure you do is have the sheriff serve, because once it's impeccable. They can't touch that, okay?
Right. Okay.
The other thing they're going to try to throw you out on is a cause of action. You got to be very clear and very careful with your cause of action. We go through clauses of action.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In our course. We also do it in the book, and you want to be careful. If anybody that's doing a court case, and if they can't figure out, because maybe they don't see something listed in a cause of action, and if they come into the Monday night call and kind of give me enough information, be able to assist them in helping them to put the proper necessities within the cause of action, that you're not thrown out from that.
Okay. Yeah.
Those are the two things they will throw you out on all the time, all day long. You don't have a cause of action. Even when you have a cause of action, it's problematic. But you don't have a cause of action, or you improperly served. And pop your doors. It is horrible, horrific. These people are evil. They all need to be in jail, in my opinion.
They protect each other. I mean, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but it's all done in unison.
I'm telling you, it is a conspiracy. It's proven a conspiracy. We've got so many cases. They've done the same thing, mostly in the federal courts. It doesn't matter whether you're in Texas. We file over in Texas, Montana, California, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut. It doesn't matter where we file, okay?
Yeah.
They all do the same thing. They all have the same game. They all process. And guess what that proves? That proves conspiracy. And what are they conspiring to do? They're conspiring to close down courts of justice. They have closed the doors of justice. They blocked them. They bricked them up. You can't get in. They don't want you in.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then
there are ways that you can do things, and you might be able to break through. You know, I've had a couple of breakthroughs. So.
Well, I'm thinking of doing this after this change happens. I mean, I'm not going to go and step into a room of crocodiles. You know, I mean. I discovered it organically last year that we don't have a judicial system, and it just took a while for me to, and then I started seeing reports about how, you know, these judges are being arrested, and then the way that Trump was treated in New York about year and a half ago, and all this stuff. And then, you know, then the lawyers, they don't want to do trials by jury. They want to do, you know, settle out of court or something. So the other thing I wanted to ask was, I moved from three different hosting services trying to find a place where my emails could be safe. And I was so wiped out that I found a fourth place, and they moved everything over. They told me everything was fine. It was secured. And then I contacted them last week. And a lot of the emails are gone. Like my sent folders are empty. And so I sent an email to the CEO. And I think they're foreign. And, you know, that's pretty much wall to wall right now. But the individual who's representing the CEO doesn't give her last name. And she wants to know what happened. And it can be real short. But I'm thinking I should put that in an affidavit, and maybe I'm too soon on this, but that way it'll be evidence, you know.
No, you're not too soon. No, writing affidavits right now, even if you're not going to go into court for 6 months or even a year, if you're writing affidavits right now, it's being written at the freshest time that you can possibly.
Okay.
Closer to time, number one. Number two, as you go back and review everything I write, I'll go and review it again and again and again.
Yes.
If I don't read that case more than 10 times, then I haven't done my job for my case. I'll write a case and set it aside a couple of days later. I'll go sit down and read the whole thing, and then I'll start making lots of changes, maybe adding some stuff, taking some stuff away, saying it a different way, using a different vocabulary, and so on. Then set it aside. I'll come back a day, a week later, or whatever the case may be. I'll look at it. Start massaging it again, doing the same thing over. That's the way you write a paper. It's over and over and over and over. Now, sometimes you can do things that you know you're going to use in other cases, and so you've got these block paragraphs that you can cut and paste that you really perfected that you can use in other cases or in other situations.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of put it together. I also have a list that I call footnotes. I've got hundreds of footnotes. Matter of fact, you can download the footnotes that I had up until the time I did that course. I put all my footnotes up. You can download them.
And I've been downloading everything. I haven't gotten to the footnotes yet. I'm almost there.
Footnotes, that's the power of my cases, because everything I do, I explain in footnotes. You can't misunderstand what I am saying, okay? Yeah. And you do that through footnotes, and there's a lot of law, Supreme Court cases and rulings, meanings of words, Black Law Dictionary, Bouvier's Dictionary, all kinds of things, founding fathers' statements, and just all kinds of things. So anyway, that's what you want to do. So now is the time to work on that. And I wouldn't do anything until. You know, it could be maybe by summertime or maybe earlier than. I don't know when it happened.
Well, I'll need that much time because I've got so much evidence. I mean, this house, I never put a nail in the wall. It's falling apart. I never did anything because I couldn't move in. And I've lost a lot of furniture, but, you know, I had to leave it outside because I had to see my floors. And so it's. You know, I have a lot of evidence, and I could take 2 hours and tell you all the evidence I have. But my main thing is just
now is the time to gather your evidence and to learn and practice and write. Write your case right now. I'd write my case right now. If you got a year to look at that, you should come up with a pretty darn good paper written by the time. And again, you know, you can learn by reading our papers. We got lots of papers we filed as grand jury, and it's a cases in the court, so you can use a lot of stuff. You can get a lot of ideas, cut and paste paragraphs, and then make it your own to work with your case. I mean, all kinds of things, but you want to read other people's papers. You want to read Supreme Court rulings, so you learn to write like them. You want to read a lot of stuff that we've written, and you just become better and better. So you have a lot of time to prepare and learn and put together a case. But with that, I got to move because we only got a few minutes and we got people.
Yes, okay. Thank you, John. Thank you so much.
Okay, good talking to you again.
You too.
Okay, let's take our next call. Or Rick, what state you're from? You got the mic. Rick. You've been unmuted, Rick. Yep, go ahead.
I think I must have got on the queue twice. I already asked my question.
All right, so we'll go to our next caller then. Okay, Margie, North Carolina, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Oh, hey. Hello, John. This is Margie.
Yep. How you doing?
Oh, fine. Just want to let you know, I sent you an email October
28,
2025. Okay. Pertaining to Charlie Kirk.
Okay.
All right.
Give me a little detail on it because I get a lot of stuff and I've got to get my old noggin to thinking about it. The 28th of October. Go ahead. Give me something on it and hopefully it'll.
This is important. He's still alive. It's under a special operation. They took him out. You know, the White Hats are in charge. The military is in charge. Donald J. Trump. He's the commander in chief of the Earth Alliance, the White Hats, and you know he called his organization Turning Point, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I've listened to Rattle Trap, 1776, Derek Johnson. Have you heard of him?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm familiar with him. I don't listen to him on a regular basis, but I've listened to him from time to time, and I'm familiar with him. But go ahead.
Okay.
Is that your source?
Yes. We go military laws and orders. That's what he teaches you, and everything. Yeah. You know, the executive orders that it goes way back to 2016. It's been going on for a long time. So he's been in charge. 45-47. He's never left. Donald J. Trump. So, and
well, yeah, I agree with that thinking too.
The army came first.
A lot of sources have made that point, and I think collectively it builds a good case and probability. Well, look at constitutional wise, he was. But go ahead.
Yes. So I sent it to you again, and then I sent it to the leadership.
Well, send it one more time. I don't know. You know, so a lot of stuff I just miss because I just delete a lot of things as I go through and try to take guesses because I haven't got time to go through everything. But send it again. Put the words Charlie Clark.
I did. And
well, and send it to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org. And everybody on the national level will get a copy of that. And they're listening in. They can also take a look to see what they think, and maybe we could talk about that next week. I'll take a look at that. Do you have video on this? I mean, what do you have?
This is what I have. Okay, he's very passionate about what he does, too. He's working for the Lord, too. He's working for God. But
first of all, I just want to say up front, though, I find it very hard. It's going to be hard to convince me that he's still alive, really hard. But
yeah,
in any event,
it's a military operation.
In any event, I still have my mind open to look and think and consider.
Okay.
You know?
He's called
a closed mind. Go ahead.
I read the book. It's called The Midnight Rider Rides Again. I read his book. But now you can also go to the documents, think plural, thedocuments.info. And he's got it all written out, and he's got another book that's coming out too. But you can read all about it there too as well, from 2016 to 2021. To he's very good.
Okay, he's got something with 1776, the documents.info. Fast check this.
That's right.
Okay, so this is where all of your info you got from here. So you don't even need to send us an email then. Okay.
Well, I did. I already sent it. I sent it.
All right. Well, I'll take a look at this and consider it. I'm finding it hard to agree with this because it's a big thing to do that. Really, really big thing.
Military laws and orders and the
the president made
executive orders.
But listen, the president made a big thing about this. A lot of people made a big thing about this. It was worldwide when this guy died. I mean, and then on top of all of that, you have, what was it? It's going to be hard to really, really believe this. But again, I will look at it. And
His place is called the Turning Point. The Turning Point. Okay, we're going to gold and silver. You know, we're moving out of
absolutely
the fiat system.
We have no choice to do that.
So this military operation's been going on for, his first term, in office.
Right.
45-47.
I'm very familiar that he was approached. I know about it.
And I do
believe that.
And the information that you filed to, what's his name, about, because that's a very good case, too. What happened to Lavoie Finicum?
Yeah. Did that
this point. Will be heard. Once we move over to the Republic rule of law, okay?
I'm going to participate in making sure that is heard once we get to courts of justice again. It needs to be heard. And look at, the Attorney General Bondi, okay, she's the one that needs to really push this. And we pressed pretty hard on this with that paper that we sent them and the videos that we sent them, all of the evidence, a mountain of evidence on this. They can't ignore it. They can't. Shame on them if they ignore this. And they're no different than the courts.
No, they won't.
Yeah. But I do find this hard to believe because there's so much that it takes.
Why do you? If you look at some other videos, Derek Johnson, he tells you, he says, It's a military operation.
What does he say? What does he say though about
this? Did you see him take? You know how it was weird how they turned the thing off it's all show, but it's a military operation. But
well, we have video of the assassination. I think we played it a couple of Mondays back. I don't remember, but I'm going to look it up to see if we didn't play it. We'll play it. Maybe next week we'll spend maybe 15 minutes looking at some forensic information, the details of the assassination, and that there was a second shooter there. And here's the thing: if it was an operation and this kid is not guilty, okay, he's in jail. What's he doing in jail? And why do they want to have a closed court? Why do they not want any cameras in the courtroom? This is a problem, okay?
Well, they want to make a point. They want to try to wake the people up, and they want to get the bad people in the government, the elite.
We've come to the end of our program, but I will look at this. You can bring this up again next Monday, and I'll take a look at this stuff.
Please.
And you know, I don't if it's overwhelming, I won't be able to go through it, but I'll try to get through what I can. And maybe other leadership here that's listening in on this, they'll do the same thing, and I'll get some thoughts from them. But it is difficult to swallow. Just the fact that this kid's in jail. And there's things, there was a thing today I saw on the Benny show. I forget the name of the guy is, Benny something. I think he's Benny Johnson, too. I don't remember. But anyway, the Benny show. And he was doing a thing with a kid that knew this kid, and also the kid that he was having a relationship. They were in the same apartment, and he revealed a lot of stuff, and it's very strange. But nevertheless,
yes, it's strange.
He's in jail. Okay, why is he in jail? That's the question. And he did not assassinate at all. He was not part of that.
No, he didn't.
Okay,
and
yet he's in jail. But he may have been brainwashed. Okay, they could do mind control. He may have been part of that. He may just there's a couple of things. He may be involved somehow. That brings us to a conspiracy. But he was not the shooter. He never got a shot off. And if that gun shows that he did get a shot off because they found it in the woods. I mean, that's a strange thing also. That's one of those stranger parts, because he takes the gun apart and then puts it back together to leave it in the woods. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Isn't that strange? It's all strange.
So if that gun was the one, then the actual shooter probably used a similar gun, and they just replaced it and put that into the woods to be found. Okay. Again, they get rid of evidence. It's the same thing over and over and over again.
It's all a movie. It's all a show.
It's
military operations. But
I can tell you, we have video of the shooter. It's split second. I mean, you have to play it over and over and over again. He does this with a lot of forensic, information on this shot. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's where the shot came from. Another individual made the shot. It was the right angle. And he went through everything to show how the bullet went into the body and why it didn't come out the other side. And he does some unbelievable forensic studies and puts this information together. So, but anyway,
you could pick the link when you're in there, thedocuments.com, the documents info. I picked Ukraine. Read about Ukraine, you'll find it very interesting. You know how you can do that, John. I mean, it won't take you that long. You can. Let's call the Ukraine. What happened in Ukraine? You know,
okay, on this page that I'm opening right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll see.
And you'll like it. You know.
Okay. With that, we're going to end our program.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Marjorie.
You're welcome.
End Q&A.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Okay, anyway, thanks for everybody coming. I'll see you next time. I'll get some feedback for me. Anyway, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Anybody interested in our Bible studies on Wednesday, 7:30, right here in this room, 7:30 Eastern Time. Good night, everybody.